Hello and welcome to RTE Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Nic Cormack. This year is the 50th anniversary of the death of fiddle player Dennis Murphy, and in this episode you'll hear the first of two programmes made by Peter Brown for RTE Radio in 1995. Fiddle player Dennis Murphy died on the 7th of April 1974. He was well known in his lifetime as an accomplished and important fiddle player from Sliabh Luachra, which is an area on the border between counties Cork and Kerry. Over the years, he was recorded by Seamus Ennis alongside his sister Julia Clifford and his teacher Pádraig O'Keefe, and then again many times by Ciarán Mac Mahúna. He also made some albums, including the legendary Star Above the Garter with Julia in 1969. In 1995, Peter Brown made a two-part documentary series for Radio 1 about Dennis Murphy, which featured interviews with friends and family and musicians. It was called Memories of Dennis Murphy, and so here now is the first of those two programmes, Memories of Dennis Murphy.
Whatever way he played, just immediately took me over, and I spent the whole evening listening, and he seemed very happy to keep playing all night. He didn't seem to want to go anywhere else.
We had a kind of a stale that time amongst us. It's like one fella playing the bass and the other fella go on high, you see. And a kind of an ornamentation, like, you know what I mean? As Pádraig was a harmony. That's what he used to call it, harmony.
The first thing we heard was no job, he can't get any job, there's no job. He could get a job selling hot dogs, and we thought it would be hot, you know, hot puppies and dogs. And we never saw a hot dog in our life.
Memories of Dennis Murphy. Two programmes recalling the life and music of a famous Kerry fiddle player by Peter Brown. Part 1. The early years, travelling to America, and Dennis's style of playing.
Dennis Murphy was born on the 14th of November 1910 at Lisheen, Guineagoyle, County Kerry, just on the border with Cork. The name Murphy is quite widespread in those parts, and Dennis's family were known through their connection with the trade of weaving.
Must be in the family, I suppose, too. What, that boy flax, wasn't it? That weaving to cloth. But that name held on to it for a long time, even Dennis was known, Dennis the Weaver.
The Weavers, they were called. Some Bill's, Dennis's father's grandfather, I'd say. You know, it was like the Gows, no, my mother's people, they were all called the Gows. But my great-grandfather didn't do any smith, you know, but still it was in the family a long, long time. But that's how the weavers were there. Well, his father never did weaving, but still the weavers, they were called the weavers all the time.
Great music in Clare, great music in Donegal, great music in Dublin, great music all over Ireland. But I have yet to hear the music I heard inside Dennis Murphy's house. From Dennis Murphy, his father was a tin whistle, and he used to play a fife, you know, the two-part fife, not a concert flute. Julia was a fiddle, and John Clifford was a small box. And those people that have passed that road and heard all those people that I have mentioned now playing, they said they never in their life had the likes of them.
On a Sunday afternoon, we all get home from mass and have dinner and everything, and somebody would take up the fiddle and start to play. And the next thing you know, people would stop dropping in, and we'd have a couple of sets going in no time. Yeah, they used to play a lot on Sundays. We used to have a lot of dancing and you know, certain nights in the week, there'd be dances. Dennison always played, more or less. He wasn't the dancer.
No.
Dennis's father was Bill Murphy, known as Bill the Waver, and his mother was Mainie Corbett, a singer.
I knew her too, but not much about her, like. She buried for years a little, but she was a very, very nice woman. I didn't hear her sing herself, but I heard her voice on a tape, and she was very, very nice in it.
There was music in his mother's family too, you know. And his father used to play a small fife. I never saw one before or since. And it was lovely.
I didn't know the father well, but he was a sportsman, a great sportsman. He had fishing as well too, you know. The Blackwater wasn't far away, and he was a big, strong, able, fit man. Worked. I don't know what he worked at like, but there's holding at home was small, so he had to work out. They had a big family. There was a big family between boys and girls in the family, so they all went to America the minute they got strong enough and had the money to go.
Oh, the music came from the father, from Bill the Waver. I don't know much about his mother's people or where they came from or anything like that, but Bill played the whistler, the flute, a tin whistler, whatever you call it. He didn't play the concert flute, he played the whistle, like blow straight into it. Oh, I'm very good too.
See, they had a band, they had a marching band in Lisheen. And he was one of the main organisers, I believe. And it seems he was a great, the father was a great whistler, you know. So somebody said to him one day, Bill, you're a marvellous whistler. So he said, you should hear me with my head inside the mate barrel, he said. The mate, you know, but if you don't have the echo.
In those houses, you may not have them seen, in the fireplace there, no, there'd be a hole in the wall on each side. And they'd have a bit of a screen to pull across, like in front of it, to keep out dust and everything. And I remember when she was in there saying that the Mercedes told her all they knew to Bill, will you play a tune yourself, Mr. Murphy, he said. That was Dennis's father. God forgive me, will he say, he put back his hand into the hole, like for the tin whistler, he pulled it out, and there was a cobweb that didn't stuck in it. And she was in his bed and say, with his hand to pull the cobweb, stop, leave it alone. That'll only make the music sweeter.
His sister, Mary, was a great player when Dennis was only 9 years old. And he used to always tell about somebody bought a fiddle for Mary because she was a great player. And he used to go up when everybody would be out, Dennis used to sneak up to bring down the fiddle. And he used to play the fiddle, and his mother came in one day and he said, if she'll catch you playing that fiddle, she says, because you're not able to play at all. But Dennis could bring out tunes that time with nobody knew it. Do you know now? Mm-hmm. And even that he was only 9. But his brother was a great player altogether then. He used to play in all the dance halls in New York, and Teddy as well. But he was playing out of his head, and to all music around, like when Dennis was a child.
He used to tell a story about himself and his father. They were sitting here one day together. And the father said to him, Jay Dennis, he said, you never think he even knew tune there. He said, now would we go in? And the day was very warm. So they went in anyhow, and the father, Bill, he played the tune anyhow for Dennis. And the next thing was anyhow, it started to rain. And before they knew forever, the rain was down on the hay. And there was murder on her. The mother gave over to him, and she was afraid. But the music was more important than the hair at that stage and age of the world anyway.
One of the things he told me actually was funny. He said that after eating dinner, the father would say grace, and the way he said it was the rum da dum do dum did light the dum. Well, he blessed himself. You can't see that on the radio. And I remember, again, not so much, the father was dead when I knew Dennis, of course, but the old mother, even though she was quiet, she loved music, mainly, and she'd have a long black dress, and you see her little feet peering out below the dress, and when Dennis played, she tapped the feet up and down, not a word out of her otherwise. But I remember Dennis telling me, when the father was alive, that some relative, an aunt or someone, died. And apparently in Kerry at that time, you weren't supposed to play any music or go to parties or anything for a year. And the two of them were going into a decline, Dennis and the father. And one day, after about 6 months, when Mainey, the mother, had gone out shopping, the father said, Dennis, you go out on the road and watch, and I'll have a tune in here, and I'll go out and watch for you, see in case she'd come back. And that way they were able to have a bit of music. Otherwise, they literally couldn't have survived. Just, I mean, it shows the degree of just sheer, not just love, but necessity the music had for them. They couldn't live without it.
Then he had a brother then in America, Dan was his name. He was supposed to be a great fiddle player altogether. But I don't think that Dennis knew that much about him. He came home on a few holidays and all of that. And Dennis was talking to him about this Padre O'Keefe, and both of them cycled to Glentan one night to meet this famous Padre. And Dennis told me they were coming home together, and Coleman, of course, was the big man in America that came for the music. And the consultation went down, and they asked, Dennis said to Dan, well, Dan, he says, what do you think now? He says, of Padraig and Coleman, how would you compare them? Well, he said, the answer I could give was that, Dennis, he said, I never thought, he said, that I would meet a man in Ireland that would be even half as good as him, but to the test of a kind between both.
Padraig, of course, was the big influence. Padraig was the master. And he got his first tuition, of course, from Padraig and himself and Jeweler. And, of course, and, they put their own stamp on their music.
Then, of course, Julia was at home, Julia Clifford. And so the two fiddles were going, and that gave it a great, great buzz entirely, because it, you know, they did quite a lot of playing in octaves and so on, you know. And again, Julia was a very happy person to meet, and there was great, great fun in her music.
And Julia, then, the sister, was supposed to be very good. Dennis would say to me, I was saying to greatness, and he would say, I could never do, he would say, the lovely things that Julia does in the fiddles, which I suppose was true. He said that she used to put in those lovely things with the lodging into the music, and you know, he said that just make it so sweet.
My greatest memory of the two of them playing together, funnily enough now, would be at my own wedding, you know. They seemed to have come to some really peak that day. I don't know, it was absolutely fabulous altogether. The music they played that particular day was only fabulous. Their own individual styles would be very, very close. My mother could sort of, even like, my mother's living in London for most of her life, and she played like all the general sort of stuff that could be played in other parts of Ireland. But when she came together with Dennis, like, she could, you know, revert back to her Slieve Lucre way, like, to play with Dennis, you know.
Said that he'd never go for competitions, that he hated them, because he said that the judges have to give it to, you know, they mightn't have to give it to the best, and they mightn't give it to the worst, and you'd be left out then. He hated competitions. Mm. He hated competitions. I never remember him going for never.
He never competed at a flag hole, as far as I know. He didn't like competitions. But who likes them? I don't like them either. I mean, who likes them? Nobody likes competitions. But he didn't like that, or he didn't like microphones. He liked, you got the best out of him in the house. If you had a party or a wedding or something like that, and the music would be there, the music was nice, you know. Or a pub will say, like, Lions of Scatter Glen, where there's a room back in the back, and we sit down there and play, and the music came nice, the music was nice. So them were the places he liked to play. But he never did care for competitions. He hated competitions. But I don't like him either. I don't blame him. I don't like him either. I like to play relaxed. And he was the same way. He liked relaxation. And then you got the best out of him.
And he loved to hear people playing their own kind of music, you know. And he always said that if everyone played the same, there'd be no variety at all. If everyone that got a fiddle and played the same tunes and the same music, and really wasn't it true too, there was no... And everybody that played the accordion, he used to say that everyone have their own way of playing.
Dennis liked to play music in places like Lyons of Scarterglen with his teacher, Paddy O'Keefe, and the two fiddles made a special sound.
Well, if you really wanted to hear Slieve Lucre music played properly, or, you know, hear nice music, that's when it was. For they could, like I said, do bassing. Paddy O'Keefe would play one key, Dennis would play another key. And then there was a blend, and that's where it came out nice. So it was lovely.
Paddy would play the tune and Dennis would have the most of the tune himself, and the two would play together then. And then Scat the Glen was great too, you know, what Lyons is in Scat. They used to meet there and they'd go there together, you know, and they'd be playing. It was Dennis's mecca, like. He should play with Paddy. The two would sit down and play.
Dennis to got me acquainted with Paddy O'Keefe above in Jack Lane's bar in Scattered Lane. And God, when I heard the two of them playing together and offered it, I was never again going to play the fight in the life, mate. I'd never heard the likes of them, which I wasn't far out in. But a man any time at all and anything at all, I think we never heard the likes of them. There's great fiddlers through the country. Maybe there might be have an advantage in Wales over the people I'm mentioning now, Dennis and Julian and Paddy, but I doubt if there would have much advantage in the Wales. But it's for to play a hand by 12 because they're sliding their jigs. That none of them. I got to Sligo and the Sligo people wouldn't play them with them. I'll be very honest with them.
They played a lot together. And then they was to meet in Scattered Glen and they played there till morning often. No restrictions in pubs at home. You could go in at 6 in the evening and come home at 6 in the morning. That was no one to interfere with you. We had a kind of a stale that time amongst us. It's like one fella playing the bass and the other fella go on high, you see. Then a kind of an ornamentation, like, you know what I mean? As Paddy was a harmony. That's what he used to call it, harmony. Of course, Paddy was kind of, how would I say, the head man, like, you know. We looked up to Paddy for being the man that knew everything.
He always spoke about Porrick. I mean, that was his whole background. He didn't talk really about anyone else. He'd mentioned Tom Billy and so on, but Porrick was his idol. And I only met Porrick once, and yet I feel as if I'd known him a number of times. But the thing I noticed most markedly was he and Dennis playing together, particularly playing the octaves, you know, and Dennis would go down the lower octave. And everything was identical. And as soon as they sat down playing, they were just like one voice, one human being almost, an extraordinary identity between them. With Porrick had that habit of wrinkling his nose when he was playing. And to my amazement, here was Dennis wrinkling the nose. In fact, I'd seen Dennis before wrinkling the nose. I didn't know where it came from. But every gesture, every move of the bow was identical. They were just... I mean, he had absorbed all Porrick's personality. And yet, he also had his own. I mean, Dennis doesn't just sound like Porrick. Like, I think any good teaching relationship, he realised his own personality in the light of the master, not simply just to imitate. And that night particularly, I remember, with the two of them playing, it's something that seemed to grow and rise up off the music. And again, I think that's unique to that Kerry fiddle playing.
When Dennis got married, it was to someone who lived just a couple of miles away, Julia Mary Sheehan of Turin Cahill.
Well, I knew Dennis always because Dennis, we were neighbours. I was only up the road from Dennis. And we were always great friends, you know, even that we were never going together because he had girlfriends and I had boyfriends. We started about 1939. And we were going together then for a long time and we got married. The marriage was in Ratmore, yeah. Who was there now, my a cousin of mine. She was my bridesmaid and a neighbour of Dennis's was his best man. And we went to, we had the reception party at Dennis's sister's house in Mallow. And we had a great time all together. We were dancing all night long. We got married in 1942, 7th of April 1942, and Dennis died the 7th of April 1974. Wasn't it peculiar, you know, to die the same day we got married?
Dennis was a fine built man, about 6 feet four, and you're athletic, straight as a barrel of a gun. Dennis had been in the FCA and he was, you tore you over all the rest of them, and no one would ever know whether Dennis had a fiddle or not. He could catch the fiddle here and hold it up under his axe and down by his head and you wouldn't see it at all.
Just, he was a big man, I suppose he was 15 stone weight, and he really looked the part, very distinguished looking, and he always kept himself neatly dressed, you know, he'd be always shiny, doesn't, you know, he really looked, I suppose you'd say he looked like a Yank.
He was about 6 feet two, right build, and as straight as a rule, very good looking fella, with black wavy hair in his young days anyway, and used to dress lovely. He was always very particular about his dress.
Well, he was a man, I'd say he was about 6 feet or something, maybe 6'1" or around there somewhere, as tall as you are, at least. And he was very well built and no superfluous fat and all that. He looked like a very rugged looking man. And good looking too, you know.
Funny thing, it was very easy to make him look like a Yank, you know, because he was a big man and he even animated of American clothes at all. He looked, you think he was nearly born over there, but once you got talking, you knew very well where he came from after a few words with him. But he'd put on a bit of a crack all right for the lads, you know.
God, Dennis was a very quiet man. There was never any trouble where Dennis Murphy'd be. Or Patrick, if either. It was all music. The only thing that went on in places like that was music. Talking music and this hornpipe and every that one. Where did you get this one? You know, that's what we learned, yeah. All the time. Oh, sure.
I don't think Dennis knew what an enemy was, you know, because no matter who he met, if somebody thought he was better than him, Dennis accepted it. If he thought he was worse, Dennis always, fell in with everybody to play. You know, everybody wouldn't have the tune the same way as Dennis would have it. But once they played it once, Dennis fell in the line, he played it their way to please him, you know.
I never heard a bad word about from him about anyone. Never fault a musician. And I had one, Julia told me one time about their father, Bill Murphy. He, like Dennis, he didn't find it easy to find fault with anyone. But some musician came along anyway, and they asked him after what kind of a musician was he. Well, he said I couldn't say he was good.
What I liked about him, well, he was a country man, and he had a good sense of humour. He spoke very rapidly, of course, but there was a great feeling of liveliness, of energy, He was a very likable person, I could say, and one always liked him. He was such a big man and such a gentleman. He was full of gentleness. And there was no problem. If there was any little delay, say, in a recording session or any little problem, a technical problem or that sort of thing, Dennis never got flustered, never got in any way annoyed. I mean, he could always take it in his stride. He was really a lovely man.
He took an interest in anything, and he always liked meeting young musicians, loved to meet young musicians, and he was very free with his music anyway. He would, if there was anyone asked him for, if he was doing it such a tune, he'd be delighted to touch them in his own, the way he thought it should be played, you know.
I'm pretty certain it was the Flann Ennis, which was the second one I went to. It was one of the first, must have been in the 50s sometime, and you know, we'd be walking around, and I came in one of the hotels on this tall character with the glasses. I thought he looked a very fine human being. And he started playing, and whatever way he played, just immediately took me over, and I spent the whole evening listening, and he seemed very happy to keep playing all night. He didn't seem to want to go anywhere else.
There was a lot of laughter where he was. You know, he had funny little sayings and ways of just making faces at that, but things he liked in the music, and he talked about funny people and had simple little stories about neighbours and that, which was very funny, and which he obviously enjoyed very much himself, and he had a great big laugh too, like, you know, and he laughed a lot. But the music, I think the music had that kind of a lively, happy sense in it too. Mm-hmm. And I remember somebody remarking that I came back some stage playing. I was playing a tape of Dennis playing. He says, gosh, that's really happy music.
There was plenty of good, happy music at home in Lisheen and good company, but it wasn't enough. And in 1949, Dennis and Julia Mary decided to leave Ireland.
We had no money, we had nothing to live on. You know, he used to cut a lot of turf and sell it. But you see, after the war, that was all over. And we have only a small place here, and there was no work. And we couldn't go to England. Our ambition was to go to England and work in England, you know. But the war in England, everybody was coming home. So we got on grand in America. We had a great time going out. It was like a big hotel. And for the first time, you know, it was all black, red here. And we got on the boat, and this was another thing that I really enjoyed. You see, the first thing that came with the first meal we got was all beautiful snow white bread. And everyone at the table, they ate all the bread, you know, before the meal came. They had all the white bread in. Oh, we enjoyed it after. And the boat, because for the first time we saw white bread, you know, for the first time. We got used to it after a couple of days, you know. It took 6 days. They'd be dancing, we'd be dancing every night, playing cards. It was like we were hoping we'd never end, but we had a rude awakening when we arrived over. The first thing we heard was, no job, he can't get any job, there's no job. He could get a job selling hot dogs. And we thought it would be hot, you know, hot puppies and dogs. And we never saw a hot dog in our life. And this is the story that we were supposed to get a job selling hot dogs. So anyway, he finally got, what is that he was doing first? Was washing pots in Shrats. And I got a job in Shrats as well, filling candy into a box. Don't you know, I'd have two, and the next one to me, I'd have two more, you know. And Dennis had working nights. Dennis was working nights for 12 months because there were no jobs there. We could get no job. So we got he worked in the zoo. He got a job in the zoo, and he loved that. Of course, it was all outdoors, and they were very nice there. at the cutting grass and all that, you know, maintenance work. That's what the job was.
They were sweeping leaves inside some convent ground, you know, and the, as fast as they were sweeping them, the wind was blowing them away again, you know. So they said, all nun came out, and she said, there's much point in doing what you're at, you know. So I got talking to her anyway, and I found out that she was from Sligo or Leeds or somewhere, and talking about the music. And then I said, I was the fiddle in the car, I said, whatever, in the, somewhere anyway. When, and I think there was very little leaves swept for them anymore around that place. I think it was nearly all music.
A lot of parties, of course, naturally, but no money in parties. But very hard to get into the union, very hard to get into the union. You'd have to be an American citizen and have your first papers, which he got. And it was very hard in the music line. He played with Paddy Gillone, yes. He played with Paddy Gillone. And John Murphy from Temple Glanton in County Limerick. We met Andy McGann, very nice fellow, very, very nice man. He was, they were great friends. Dennis used to be out a lot. You know, we had a phone, and they'd call up, you know, go here and go there.
I met him in Ladder Byrne's house at a music session. And we had great times. All the boys were there, you know. I thought he was a very nice guy. And he mixed in very well with everybody in New York. All the musicians, every one of them. He was one of the boys, right off. He was the first man I ever heard playing slides. I didn't know any slides up to that time. Oh, yeah. He played a lot of those. But he got in on the reels, you know, and he was good at it too. But he had one that we called Dinny Murphy's Reel. We named it after him. It was his own reel. I never knew. They probably give it different names since then. But in those days, all the Bronx fiddlers, it was known as Dinny Murphy's Reel. I know, I couldn't. I'm not good listening.
One time in Manhattan, I was recording as much music as possible in New York. So we hired a studio in the CBS studios down in Midtown. Now, when I say hire a studio, you could hire a room. It wouldn't necessarily be a recording studio, but you brought in your own recording equipment and there'd be a piano room. You could rent a room for rehearsals and that sort of thing for a whole evening. And so we gathered an awful lot of musicians, including Dennis Murphy, and I was down on the street, you know, just outside this place, and right in Midtown, and I saw this figure walking up with the fiddle, you know. I said, God, that's Dennis Murphy, and he always held the fiddle upright under it, never horizontal. It was always seemed to be whether it was tucked in under his elbow and, or under his armpit. So, but he that was one of the big sessions.
I don't know much about it, except I remember him telling me that he was working in a museum. He was some sort of security guard, because he said he was saying how boring it was. He was saying he was standing there and he thought someday someone would come over and dust him. think he was one of the exhibits. So he wasn't, I don't think he was very happy in that job. He was literally doing time.
He said, I'm working in the museum. And I said, what the hell are you doing in the museum? Oh, dusting statues all day. He said, I have a shine put in Lincoln's nose. He said, I'm rubbing it daily. You know, and funny enough, he said, before I went to the museum, I worked in the zoo, and I did the same thing, I suppose, showing people around and doing general work. But he was telling me how he met these two ladies one day, and they asked him, as they were passing the lines in, he said, what's in there? And he said to me, he said, nothing, it was just two lines, you know. Give the impression, go in if you want to, like. And then he turns over to me right here, he said, lines, they do too. But The next place I met Dennis was inside here in the old Round Hotel. I forget what was going on after he came home from America. And as we walked down the stairs, I said to Dennis, Dennis, how long are you staying around or when are you going back? I'm not going back anymore, he said. And he said, there's more fun here. And he stood up in the middle of the stairs to say that much.
Well, we were not comfortable there. You know, we were longing to come home. And then we discovered after coming home, which was foolish, because there was nothing at home. There was nothing to live for at home, you know. Nothing had changed, no.
After he went back from here, him and somebody else who was there, when I remember, were walking down through the field. It was wet, kind of a wet, you know, the grass is always wet. And a big bullfrog jumps out and goes like this. Frog goes, his eyes pop out in front of you. And Dennis stands and look at him. And he says to the other guy, he says, Jesus, I don't think he knows me.
He doesn't know me at all since I've been away.
Dennis and Julia Mary crossed the Atlantic back and forth several times, and the final time he was very happy in his work.
He had a very nice job. In fact, now he had a friend that worked in Columbia University in Bakersfield, and he worked with this John McMahon. He's from Castle Pollard in County Westmeath. And ever since, Dennis, he even came to Dennis's funeral all the ways. And every Christmas I get a card. And look, I just got a card from yesterday, from Castle Pollard.
Well, he was a big man, you know. Big, broad shouldered, and like a fella, he was a good worker, like. He always seen the humorous part of everything, you know. Nothing seemed to bother him. And another great point he had, he'd never criticise anybody. I never heard him, you know, the way some musicians criticise one another, there's such a lad as this or that. Never that with Dennis, everyone was the same. He had two nephews. This bloke that I lived with was Timothy, or Tig, they used to call him for his Irish name. But anyway, this chap got married, and Dennis was in his glory that day. There was a big do in a hotel in the Bronx. See, and it was packed, you see. So when the wedding was over and all the celebrations was over, the whole crowd spilled out into the street, and Dennis was out on the street playing the fiddle. He was in terrific order, you see. So in a few minutes, there was about 200 round him listening. People passing by, stand to listen to him. And this big fella came over, a big yank, and he says, I'll play a tune, you know. So, oh, sure, says Dennis here, handing him the fiddle to play the tune, and Dennis handing him the fiddle. And your man hadn't a clue, and he'd put it under his chin and pretend. And Dennis had said to me, he can do it. I know he can do it. But you see, the Yanks are great for that, you see, for pretending. But he hadn't a clue.
They said the polka man, they used to call him in the States. Dennis Murphy, the polka man. So he played a lot of polkas. But for the day, were the things he liked. I mean, Patrick, he played them too, he didn't like them. Everything he played was good. No question about it.
Reels. He had, I could name all the reels. His sister, his niece, Cathy, she didn't want to hear him playing anything else but St. Anne's reel. Judy, her sister, she had no mass in St. Anne. Kennedy's reel. Maud Miller was my favourite. Everyone had their own favourite, and the very minute that he'd start playing, if he looked whoever would be there, he'd always play their favourite, do you know? But he'd play slides, and mostly for the dance, he'd play the polkas. But if he sat down there and brought up the fiddle, he'd never play a polka, no slide, only all reels.
He was very good at the reels, and he played some great reels. But I still believe that he loved the slides and polkas. I really believe that he really did, because they were the tunes of the area. Because he had to play the slide. Everywhere he'd go, to any house he'd go to, he'd have to play the slide of the polka and the hornpipe, you know, because they would dance. Because Dennis, he'd never be sitting down in the corner playing for long for someone to catch a hold of a woman and say, come on, we'd go to... If there was only maybe two there, they danced. Somebody would figure out a set, you know. I suppose the Slieve Lucre music is really dance music.
The minute he'd start to play, I'd say to whoever was in the house, that's Dennis. You know, I'd know him, his style. You know, he used to finish up with a kind of a long thing on the bow, you know. I'd know him out of a million. Yeah. He loved the Kerry music, the slides and the polkas, you know. But, I mean, he could play anything.
The whole verve of it, the great ornamentation in it and so on like that, there was a great liveliness in it that you couldn't but fall in love with, and a great rhythm. And Dennis particularly, his ornamentation I thought was tremendous. You know, this great flow of if you might describe it as ornamented music. This had a greater flow than anything that I'd heard before I actually came to meet Dennis. Maybe others had heard the equivalent of Dennis, but certainly he was the first of that style that I'd heard, and I was very impressed by it.
You can have all the music in the world, but you must have a bit of a hat to put into it to make it sound, and Dennis had that. The way the band he had. He often, you know, he often enjoyed us dancing, like, he'd tell you after, like, that there's no trouble playing for good dancers.
He was a man who was willing to play anything he would play. He was not dominating. If you named a tune, and if he had it at all, he'd play it with you. Not like modern guys that like to take over and play their own stuff all night long, but he was a great character.
A lot of it was with the bow, but one of the things he did, for instance, was and coming to the end of a phrase, kind of, you know, to take the last note from the phrase and to really to belt it into the start of the next phrase, which gives it a great lift. And that's one of the things. I think if you can't do that, you don't get the right lift out of the Kerry music. I think, you know, many people, particularly up the country, and I say this as a Clare man, if you like, Clare and further north, you know, haven't listened closely, you know, to Dennis Muff's kind of music. And there's a lot of lovely things in it. And if you're expecting the Sligo technique or the Clare technique or the Donegal thing, they aren't there. But they're others. They're little secrets, if you like, as Dennis once said.
Number one, he was a big man with long hands and, of course, nice light fingers, and don't you know the movement, you know, would be very supple. He was very relaxed, like. He never got, as we used to say, tied up in it.
It's a terribly light style. I think that's so characteristic of the Kerry style. It hasn't anything like the driving force of Donegal or Sligo, but it's very light and very subtle. And I always notice they don't use the bow so much. I mean, they do the rolls with the fingers, but because they sort of swept the bow across, and that was part of that singing quality. But it's the lightness that would stay most clearly with me. And also, they don't play so fast, whereas nowadays nearly everybody seems to be thrashing along, and I can't keep up with them.
Sligo style is more of a lonely, tranquil kind of music. He was more dancing kind of music. Sligo style then was. What would you call listening music, more so? But when Denny Murphy played, you felt like getting up and dance.
It was lovely to listen to, and it was lovely to dance to as well. There was a fantastic time when you play a slide now, or, you know, or a polka. It was when a good dancer would be out there. It was like we'd have a drummer. I always thought it very sad that any youngster outside around the place in Slieve Lucre didn't really come up with that style. There are a few very good young lads there, but the true Dennis style don't seem to me to be there. There was a generation went there now that nobody took up the fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
In part one of Memories of Dennis Murphy, we heard Sonny Reardon, Julia Mary Murphy, Hanny Murphy McCardle, John McMahon, Paddy Cronin, Jimmy O'Brien, Johnny O'Leary, Mikey Duggan, Seamus McMahona, Dan O'Connell, Kieran McMahona, Robord McGordoyne, Paddy Reynolds, Billy Clifford, Dennis McMahon, Peter O'Loughlin and Ivor Brown. In next week's programme, we hear of Dennis's music and singing, the return from the US and the last night in Knocknagree.
Thanks for listening to the Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife McCormick. And that programme was made for RTÉ Radio 1 by Peter Brown. And we'll hear the second part next week. Until the next time, Gur Míle Maggie, agus slán.